Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rebel Rouse from Rich Bergeron.
It's the one and the only, the tornado, the legend, the icon, Tony Pinnacle.
And I'm sure we'll be hooking up on this call with Tom, Psychic Tom, one of these minutes here, any minute now. And we're going to try for the third time tonight to connect with Brandon Shelton at 9:15. So we've got that coming up. And we got a lot of news, lots of news. A lot of events to cover, a lot of events to talk about. Our former guest won over the weekend, Demetrius Andrade.
Yes. And you know what? That was not, that should have not been a split decision. Well, aside from the first round knockdown, he really dominated most of that fight.
Right. Well, I didn't see it myself, but I did hear about it. And there were some pretty exciting other fights on that card. I know that Nonito Donaire got off the canvas to win his fight. He was by knockout.
Yeah.
Against
Victor
Chinian. That was a rematch too, right?
Yeah.
And then Mikey Garcia was also on that card. I think he won his fight. I forget who he fought though.
Yeah, he won by knockout. That was it was a fight card that was a lot more competitive than it was on paper. Donaire had already decimated Darchinian a couple of years ago, and granted, he's coming off a big loss to Rigondeaux, but it was, I wouldn't decimate him again, and it was a hell of a lot closer, than their first fight, and so he just destroyed him. I think it was the 8th or 9th round. I think it was the 9th round. He was doing down on the card. Andrade's fight was a lot closer. The judges had a lot closer than it really was. And then even the Garcia fight, he had some moments in there, and so he scored the knockout. But, that fight, I had Garcia, dominating, when I was thinking who was going to win.
Well, Tom has joined us.
All right. I'm late to the party, but I'm here. How are we doing, guys?
Good. Oh, doing good. Friday
All right.
Eve, as I call it.
Okay.
Well, we got tons of MMA to talk about, too. Of course, we have the UFC fights over the weekend that I only saw a few of, but enough to be pretty impressed. At least with Vitor Belfort. he got knocked out with a number 6 in karate. Number 6 kick. A pretty brutal knockout. He was basically, trying to feel out Belfort early on, and then Belfort just came in, landed a few shots, and Dan tried to stand back up and got hit. Left-footed showstopper.
Yeah, apparently Dana's comment about Henderson's future was we'll talk. Because Dan had made the comment, he's on a 3-fight losing streak, and a lot of times 3 fights in a row, and that's it. And Dan his comment was, well, I've had a couple bad breaks the last few fights. Yeah, he sure has. So. Maybe we've seen the end of him. I mean, I've always been a big fan, but he is 43, so we'll see how that tune's played.
Well, we'll get to the rest of the fights a little later here. I've got to bring up the results. And then we have another UFC this weekend. They're really spoiling us. So, we've got UFC 167, big title fight between George St. Pierre and Johnny Hendricks at the head of that one. St. Pierre's 24-2, Hendricks is 15-1. And interestingly enough, today the news just went out that Ben Askren has been released from his Bellator contract. So the timing is a little suspicious there to me. I think they want to make George St. Pierre win that fight, be his next fight against Ben Askren, but we'll see. They might not want to do that right away.
That's very interesting that you bring that up, because I just... so far, the last I've heard, the UFC has no interest in signing Ben Askren. Now, we'll see if it's a contract ploy or something like that, but Dana said there is, we have no interest in him.
Well, I know they said that at the point where they Bellator came out and said they would release him if he had an immediate shot at GSP, they'd release him without matching rights. They released him without matching rights anyway.
Right. Well, there's a lot of conspiracy theories floating around now, and one of them is they'll never sign anyone from Bellator, and no one will want to go to Bellator. I mean, I don't think it's anything near that deep, but, hey, who knows? But I suspect that there may be some contract negotiations here on this.
Could be. Let's see. We got a boxing reality show coming out. I don't know if you guys are thinking about this, but I think it's going to be called Ring Dream, even though it really doesn't say that's the name here. I got this article about it, and it mentioned something to the effect of, you know, this thing is in the planning stages. There's been a lot of stuff over in BoxingScene.com. Floyd Mayweather Sr. and Yoel Judah are on board as two of the trainers. The fighters that will be involved. They can also report there that five-time world champion Zab Super Judah and his brother Joe will be involved. And DJ Flores will be involved, as will our former guest, Christy Martin. And they're not even saying what channel it's going to be on. Just a hot new cable channel that is growing rapidly and currently available in over 35 million homes. Sounds to me like Fox Sports 1. Former IBF junior middleweight champion Kasim Uma will be at the tryouts for the 154-pound division. And light heavyweight contender Ron Johnson is putting together the sparring for the show. And this week, apparently, they're going to be signing Ruben Guerrero to be the third and final trainer. And it's not just, it's just a short list of people that are going to be involved, according to the producer. But basically, it's going to be built around the 140, 147, and 154-pound weight divisions. And the winners of the tournaments in each weight class will then face a top 20 contender to see if they can realize their, quote, ring dream, unquote. So I think that's a little clue into what they're going to call it.
Okay, now, is this mainly for up, because you mentioned Kasim Uma, so I guess this isn't restricted to young upcomers, correct?
Well, I really don't have a lot of information about it. This is the first I've heard of it. I guess BoxingScene.com has an exclusive relationship there with the
With the exception of one season, and that was the fourth one on The Ultimate Fighter, every one of those shows has been geared toward the young upcomers. And you remember The Ultimate Fighter season 4 was guys that were getting like a second chance. But
right.
The other ones have all been the young upcomers, and so I just wonder what this one will be.
Well, we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it. Shane Mosley back in the news in boxing. He's had some issues, I guess, with his fight, planned fight with Anthony Mundine. But now it's guaranteed, he is guaranteeing it anyway, that it will go forward. He got to Sydney, Australia on Thursday for the November 27th bout. Just over 3 weeks after walking away from the original event because of unpaid fees of about $700,000 in Australian dollars. But Mundine and his manager since resurrected the fight and put out more than $1 million Australian to lure the former three-time world champion back to Australia and promote about themselves. So Mosley said on Wednesday, it's definitely happening. They put the full $1 million into escrow. So I can guarantee you the fight is going ahead. Mosley said nobody can really be blamed as far as the fighters, but the promoter, Vlad Wharton, is the real culprit. He says whoever constructed the contract and the deal messed up the deal. Also added, I like Mundine as a person, but in the boxing ring, we are, and I've come here to knock him out.
I always remember about Anthony Mundine. He's never been a favorite of mine. But he was fighting a fighter that I criticized so many times on here. Hotsi had a career total of, I think, 6 knockouts, with Mundine being one of them. Hotsi knocked him out cold, I think, with a single right hook.
Well, actually, Mosley pissed off some Australian boxing fans for it. When he labeled the local boxing scene behind the times and, quote, almost like the mafia days, unquote. He got back to the U.S. last month after making this deal. But he's standing by those comments instead of taking it back. He said, I said that I believe the way the setup was with the fighting, with the judging, it seemed kind of strange here, he said. But this is what they're telling me. I'm just regurgitating what's been said to me. Asked if he was worried about problems with the judging for the new fight, Mosley said, no, I'm not really looking to go into the scorecard, so it doesn't really matter about the judging. There you go. So Mosley's still going to make a go at it. I think this is a much better match for him than some of the top talent in the division. So I like his chances there. And what would a week of combat sports show be without a Mike Tyson story? This one's a real pisser. Mike says he used plenty of illegal drugs during his boxing career, cheating to get through drug tests held by state commissions. And of course, you know, he's on Broadway. He's been in his own movie about himself, basically a documentary. He's got his own reality show, he's got his own fight promotion, and you know you gotta write a book. So he's got a book now coming out, Undisputed Truth. And he says he was a, quote, full-blown cokehead, unquote, who fought under the influence frequently during his career, using a whizzer to scam drug testers. And if you don't know what a whizzer is, it's basically a fake penis where you put someone else's clean urine in to pass a drug test. And so Tyson actually claimed a $200,000 fine for testing positive for marijuana after a 2000 fight against Andrew Gulotta in Detroit. On the fact that he was tested before having a chance to get his whizzer from a member of his team, whom he claims typically carried the device from fight to fight. Yeah, who's on Wizard?
You know, I guess I'm so out of it with that stuff. I'm thinking of a wrestling wizard. You know, when you said that, and I'm thinking, wizard like he did on Francois Botha in that fight. You know, oh wow.
And actually, I haven't heard the methodology before about how you get past testing like that. But I did when I was boxing at Norwich. Well, not boxing there, but coaching boxing. There was a kid on the team, the club team there, who told me he was he used to be in Pernell Whitaker's entourage back in the day. And they would see these guys, including Pernell, just devour piles of cocaine backstage before fights. So Tyson's obvious first person to do something like that. But it's interesting.
I don't know if I ever told you guys this one from my time at Lock Haven. Well, I think I actually mentioned it, but we used to have our open, flyouts, but our meeting every year in September, right around mid-September, and then the church would meet everybody, and Dr. Tassini, we all knew him, the veterans, and I had even met him as a freshman before I had started on the team, so I knew what to expect. But over the years, you'd have this meeting, he would joke around a little bit, but then he'd get real serious. And one thing he'd say was, that he was So, this kid quits. I mean, he just flat out quits. I see him in the dorms. I'm like, I think his name is Justin. I'm like, Justin, why'd you quit? All you kept talking to me about the last 2 weeks was signing up for the boxing team. You couldn't wait, and you were going to do this and that. Oh, man, I don't want to run 3 miles a day, man. I'm like, that's not mandatory. I mean, obviously, you want to condition yourself, but you run to your own discretion. No, man, I ain't running no 3 miles, man. I'm like, kid, why don't you tell me the truth? You don't want the random drug test. No, that ain't it. I'm like, bullshit, Justin, it ain't it. Dude, your eyes are half glazed over right now. I can tell you're high as a fucking pipe. that was just reminded me of that. It just made me laugh. I was there for 4.5 years, never had a random drug test, by the way.
Well, it's kind of funny because, when I went to the Air Force Academy, they did the drug testing there, and they'd wake you up at like 4 o'clock in the morning and line you up in front of the bathroom to get it done. And they did like maybe 4 of them, and over the first year I was there, and I got picked for every one. I'm starting to say, how's that random? I'm being targeted. Never got caught, obviously, for anything because I wasn't doing anything.
It must have been your beard, Rich. It must have been that big beard you have.
Well, I didn't have it then. I don't know. It's one of those things. If you can get around the illegal drugs, you obviously can get around testosterone doing the same thing. So I hope they're aware of that type of stuff and trying to do something about it. Anyway, some good news on the Abdu Salamov front. He's still in a coma, but there was a prognosis that he wasn't going to make it. Which I did not read, but apparently now they're saying that's not the case. He is going to be, this is survivable, and he could be taken out of the coma by Friday.
Good.
But this was all after he underwent a CAT scan and a reflex test Wednesday. And so his condition is improved. But actually, it's a pretty rare case because from what the promoter said, Samson Lukowitz, or Nathan Lukowitz, I should say, he said they've never seen anything like that based on the fact that a week ago they were pretty certain he wasn't going to make it, and today they're pretty certain he's going to survive. They did the CAT scan and the reflex test, and from what they're saying, they're pretty bullish on the fact that he's going to be surviving this. They're hoping to wake him up in the next few days. That's a big improvement from last week when there was almost 100% chance he was going to die. Doctors are unsure what his state of being will be once he wakes up from the coma and what happens with the life support that doctors have said has been keeping the boxer alive since November 3rd. Lukowitz said there's a possibility that he might have trouble speaking. There's a possibility he could be blind. There are many different variables they're not going to know until they wake him up. The boxer's wife will move her family, him, her, and the three daughters to Greenwich, Connecticut living with a cousin initially, eventually finding an apartment to be near her husband, the court said. Abdusalamov's brother has been sleeping on a chair in the hospital room from the beginning, keeping a vigil. Lukowitz said he thinks the many prayers for the fighter are being answered. I think it's working, to be honest, the promoter said. I'm not really that religious a person, but it's pretty crazy what's been going on in the last week, where it's a complete 180 from expecting him to go to now he's going to Sabat. So it may not be much of a quality of life, but, you know, we don't have to talk about another boxing death. So in that way, it's good, but still, you can't help but think this all could have been prevented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a very disgusting article you sent, a very disgusting article. And in this case, I mean, I've seen this stuff happen so often when any time there's a blood clot issue on the brain or any kind of removing part of the skull, that's just as bad as it gets. So I'm pleasantly surprised to hear this.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised to hear that he was close to death, but I never read that. I mean, obviously, if you're in a coma, you're pretty bad off, but
yeah,
usually, it's, you know, wait and see, and he'll come out of the coma. Very strange. Tough case.
I wonder what I keep thinking about, because obviously he's still in the coma, and we don't know how it's going to turn out yet. I just keep thinking back to Gerald McClellan, who's been in his, you know, state since early 1995. And that was when it started with Nigel Benn, which was another situation of just absolutely just piss poor officiating, and which really cost the man his life and definitely ruined his quality of his life. I know we've had discussions with regards to Gerald, and you know, he's mostly blind, mostly deaf, and I know we had a guest on we had an in-depth discussion about him. I mean, the Gerald's condition maybe is not as bad as they make it out to be, but it was definitely still preventable at the same time. And right now, when he was in that coma, after, you know, having that surgery, it's like, okay, good, he's going to survive, but we don't know what his quality of life is going to be. I mean, you have certain people that survive, and they end up doing, you know, very well. And then you have other people that they survive, and maybe they don't do as well.
Well, we have another pretty interesting story here. Our boy Matt Yanowski sent me this story about Floyd Rainmaker Melson, who's a junior middleweight boxer and donates his purses to spinal cord injury charities. Now he's going to be knighted by St. John of Jerusalem.
Wow.
So St. John is one of the greatest treasures of Christendom and is one of the world's oldest continuing knightly institutions.
Well, Floyd Nelson, right?
Floyd Nelson, right.
It's funny because I did ring announcing for one of his fights way back in the day when he was at Army.
Nice. Well, he's going to be knighted, and he is a West Point grad. Active Army Reserve officer, 32 years old, and he's pretty big on the New York boxing scene. He's donated every penny from all 14 of his fight purses, 13 to a specific clinical trial aimed at curing chronic spinal cord injuries, and one to a friend with a son that had cancer. And he's been on HBO, ESPN, Yahoo, Sports Illustrated, and various other outlets. He has a 12-1-1 professional record with 4 wins by KO. And started him and his best friend, Kristen Zacagnino, started Team Fight to Walk in an effort to financially support and publicize America's first clinical trial using the transplantation of umbilical cord cells. So it's pretty important work that he's done. Supporting over the years, and he'll be knighted. Got some fights coming up here. I wanted to mention tonight. It's actually over in the UK. It's probably over. Start at 3 p.m. this afternoon. International Heavyweights Prize Fighter Tournament got underway over in the UK. The featured competitors were Jason Gavin, Michael Strott, James Toney, Damian Wills, Larry Olbemuo, Tom Little, Matt Legg, and Brian Minto. They squared off in a single elimination tournament. And Anthony Joshua will have his third pro fight against Hervoge Kisikek, the feature attraction on that card. It's probably over by now, but I don't have the results in front of me. Tomorrow night, it's not really a big fight, so I won't mention that. Saturday, we have a big scrap between David Tua and Alexander Ustinov. Also, Robert Berridge and Daniel McKinnon. Don't have records in front of me, but Tua will be 41 later this month. Hasn't fought since August 2011 when he lost to Mickey Barrett. And he went 24 rounds and went 0-1-1 against Barrett. So he's not a very big favorite in this fight. And his last KO came against Shane Cameron, who's really a cruiserweight, and that was back in 2009. Ustinov, says this article, is not any good at all, but he is very tall and very large. Also, we have Sergey Rabchenko versus Bradley Price. Rabchenko is unbeaten. He's a silver WBC light middleweight champion. Price isn't expected to get in much trouble. And also on NBC on Saturday, we have Thomas Adamek. Vyacheslav Golovkov and Carl Dargan versus Mike Brooks. Dargan's 13-0, 7 knockouts. And he's from Philly. He's
28. Yeah. I don't know Carl personally, but I've followed him since his amateur days, and he's a young prospect there, you know?
And Brooks is 10-0-1 with 2 knockouts. For some reason, I don't have the records of anybody else.
Dargan actually has been in camp with Manny Pacquiao on several occasions. He's foreign.
Right. And the big fight, the big fight of the weekend, comes from Ontario. It's Andre Ward versus Edwin Rodriguez. First and last fight.
You've got Ward coming off a hiatus of almost 15 months and some injury problems. You've got Rodriguez, who's a hungry fighter. He's got good punching power. You know, I think Roger Ward can for all he can handle, but at the same time, he's got to go with his experience. He's such an exceptional boxer. As much as I like Edwin Mbamba Rodriguez, I think you got to go with the experience factor in this fight and just Ward's ability to neutralize his opponent.
Well, I will definitely be rooting for Rodriguez.
Absolutely.
That's too promising. But, you know, you never know when a guy's coming off that long of a layoff from real physical contact competition. That could be a big factor. So we'll see how that unfolds there. But I definitely want to watch that one, and I will be rooting for the undercover. And got one more big boxing story here. Vander Holyfield, guy who probably needs some charity himself, has been involved in some big charity. He's working with billionaire Jamie Barry, and they started a campaign for support of refugees in Bulgaria. have no idea how Holyfield connects with Bulgaria.
Yeah.
They're in the capital of Sofia, where Syrian families were accommodated. And the billionaire and philanthropist Barry there visited Sunday the refugee shelter and camp in the southern Bulgarian town of Hamanli. And they're aiming to help the refugees. Holyfield explained that he grew up in a ghetto and wanted to set an example for other people about how one can help in a difficult situation. He said, "I myself grew up in poverty, and without the help of people, I would not be who I am. When I was 8 years old, I was told that I would be the next Muhammad Ali, and the most important thing for me is that I achieved this with the help of others, so I'm glad that I can help." And according to the refugees, they said, "They are treating us like animals. We're not here for Bulgaria. We're here because of the European Union." Barry, however, explained that Bulgaria cannot afford to do more and the European Union was not granting sufficient funds. He promised to rent many more buildings to house refugees. So Bulgaria did not create the situation. Bulgaria is trying to help, but it is a poor country. We're here because I have a sentiment for Bulgaria. During World War II, the country rescued many Jews from concentration camps, and I'm Jewish. I'm here to rescue refugees in Bulgaria with my own money. So, Andrew Holyfield making the rounds overseas. And I'm not going to go into much detail on this one, but there's a big story in the Star Ledger. It's basically, if you follow some of the MMA blogs, they've referenced some of it, but they're basically doing a major piece on concussions and brain injuries in the UFC and MMA in general. And they had a big interview in there with Lawrence Epstein, who is the chief operating officer of the UFC. And he doesn't really say it's safer than boxing, but there's a part in here right in the beginning where he says, "Our sport is very different from ours. I just want to make sure we got that perspective. MMA is certainly much safer than many other sports that are out there." So he's kind of trying to lay the clue that he's trying to say that it's safer than boxing. So I think that's kind of a cheap shot. I would say there's probably been more recorded deaths in boxing, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's safer in the long run. Some of the stuff in this article is pretty intense. I'm just going to read the summary piece that they put up. The story features a number of anecdotes from fighters about slurred speech, headaches, and forgetfulness. And here's a segment, a couple spots that they quote. Here's a story from UFC fighter Tom DeBlas. DeBlas already retired from fighting once last November after losing his UFC fight in the UFC, but he returned in April to a different promotion and scored a technical knockout to improve his record to 8-2. After that win, DeBlas said he wasn't sure he would fight again. He said his brain would ache after sparring, and his fiancée, Delilah Acevedo, says he is generally more forgetful. This spring, for example, DeBlas was ordering takeout from Conca de Oro restaurant in Fork River for a gathering at his home. Minutes later, he called back and tried to order the same meal again, forgetting he had already done so. The thing that should but probably won't open the most eyes, however, is some of the data being collected on the sport. A three-year-old study, which includes scanning the fighter's brains, tracking cognitive function, and taking speech samples, showing the brains of MMA fighters are deteriorating much the same as boxers. And when talking to fight doctors for previous articles related to concussions and brain damage, the cognitive function tracking and speech sample tracking is what they've suggested to be a good way to determine when fighters shouldn't be licensed anymore. Differences in the two over time are typically linked with CTE, which can't yet be reliably diagnosed in living humans. But anyway, there's another piece here. One fighter, for example, says he slurs his speech for up to 36 hours after sparring sessions. He also was found wandering a department store, oblivious to how he got there. Others tell stories of being dizzy for months after a fight and unable to remember people they'd met a few days earlier. So it's a real wake-up call, I guess, for MMA. These people are having these issues. But, it's not something that's going to go away anytime soon, I think. If you guys get a shot, read that thesis. It's pretty in-depth, but it goes into a lot of detail, talks a little bit about boxing, a little bit about MMA, a lot of implications. And it's good stuff. Good reading, anyway. Good for the fighters. And of course, we have big UFC 167 event this weekend, Saturday, and one of the fighters on that card is Brian Ebersole, who has 50 wins, 15 losses, and one draw. He's fighting Rick Story, who's 15-7. But I found this article about Ebersole, something about Cousins Unite, and I guess one of his cousins is going to be with his medical team. But that's not really why I wanted to share this piece of the article. There was a portion of the article that mentioned Ebersole's idea here, which is I'm hearing for the first time. It's called Fund a Fighter. This is an online service. I don't know if it's Ebersole Creation. He's just involved. He's plugging it, and basically it allows fans to donate money directly to fighters for training camps, medical procedures, and other things. And in return, fighters can send back notes, memorabilia, and other items as a token of gratitude. So it's kind of like Kickstarter for MMA fighters. And Ebersole described it as about connecting directly with the fan. It's not a dealer putting a signed glove in a frame. It helps a fighter use their likeness, and you get a little bit of profit from it. The UFC is pretty controlling on that front, so Ebersole hasn't heard anything on that, but he says they haven't reacted yet, and I'm waiting with bated breath. We'll see. We've talked about fighters having trouble with getting sponsorships and stuff like that, and expenses, and of course there's been a big fighter pay debate regarding a couple guys who left recently. But Ebersole's motivation to engage with Fund a Fighter is related to a desire to find a new or could be related to finding related to his desire to find a new revenue stream. So he did point out that the UFC has been very good to me, but he also said extra money is always a good thing. It's a need, he said. I spent $23,000 on this game. I've been here in Vegas for a month, and I'm spending $100 on each private lesson because my network isn't here. It's been a costly game. Granted, he's coming from Australia, so a lot of that had to be hair. And as far as Story, he says, I think I have a handle on the beast that it is Rick. That it is Rick Story. There are a few things he does over and over. I'll have to dictate my own fight, which is tough because he pushes forward so much. It will be a grind, especially since we're both pretty decent in this one. And speaking of the UFC and some of their pay policies and other issues, Matt Hughes came out of the woodwork this week. He's currently the UFC Vice President of Athlete Development. And he's a little late on the development of these two guys. He just took to ask Randy Couture and Tito Ortiz, and he said they got what they deserved on jumping ship when the price was right. And this was an interview with MMA Fighting. He said, the way I look at it, it was their decision. Randy Couture sued the UFC. He left the UFC, so he should know that there's going to be a little bad blood there from what's happened. I'm not saying the UFC's never done anything to Randy. That just comes to mind. Tito Ortiz, the same way. I think he's badmouthed the UFC a little bit. I would say this about the UFC. If you're good to them, they're good to you. Those guys, at certain times in their careers, they weren't loyal to the UFC. So now they're paying the price. But Dana White called it karma instead of paying the price. But Couture actually had an on-again, off-again relationship with the UFC. And even though he had his big contract dispute in the courts, he eventually reconciled and finished up his career inside the octagon. But the real problem started when he left Fox. No explanation. Not even a phone call, I don't think, to Dana White. As soon as he got the offer from Bellator to be on Fight Master. And, so this is interesting that he's taking a cue from Dana White there, without the expletives. It is what it is. Anyway, we've got to talk about the fights from this last weekend. We only mentioned one. UFC Fight 932, Vitor Belfort versus Dan Henderson. That was the main event, and as I mentioned, Belfort got the win. The official time was 1:17 in round one, and it was a knockout by head kick. We also had Cesar Ferreira beat Daniel Sarafian by split decision. Had Rafael Cavalcante beat Igor Pokorzhak by TKO, knees and punches. That was 1 second off the main event as far as the stoppage. Took Cavalcante one more second to go for Pokorzhak. We also had Brandon Thatch beat Paulo Thiago by KO from a knee to the body. That was the first. That was in the first round also, the 2:10 mark. And Ryan LaFlair beat Santiago Ponzinibbio by unanimous decision. Jeremy Littlehaven Stevens beat Rumi Mariano Bezerra by head kick in the first round, 40 seconds in. Our first round stoppage. Sam Cecilia beat Godofredo Castro by TKO first round, 1:42 in the first round. And Omari Akhmedov beat Thiago de Oliveira Perpetuo by knockout punches in the first round again, the 3:31 mark. And got three more here. Thiago Tavares beat Justin Salas by rear naked choke submission. That's also in the first round, the 2:38 mark. And we have Adriano Martins beat Darren Cruikshank by submission, straight armbar. That was in the second round at the 2:49 mark. And Dustin Ortiz beat Jose Maria Tomei by TKO punches in the third round at the 3:19 mark. And kind of a, I guess, not so funny story coming out of this card. I think it was this card. It might have been the last Wednesday. Let me find it here. We had a little bit of a suspension from Ronnie Jason. That must have been the last one, because it was in Brazil. I guess that's Ronnie Maria Mariano Bezerra. But Ronnie Jason down there in Brazil. But he suffered his first loss in the UFC, but he caused more damage to himself than Jeremy Stevens could. Because he got stopped with a high kick in the head, like I read, just 40 seconds into the fight in Brazil, in his home country. And the referee stopped the bout when he realized the Brazilian was out. And as soon as he left the cage, devastated, Jason started punishing himself for the loss. and entered his locker room, punched himself in the face twice, and smashed a door with his elbow, leading to injuries that needed 22 stitches. I wonder if that's covered in the UFC health plan. He says, I hurt my elbow, but I'm okay.
Yeah.
I was crying, angry with my loss, and I landed my elbow on the door. Like he fell off. It's hurt, but didn't break any bones. I was just devastated at that moment. I trained for a long time for this fight. I was undefeated for 4 years. Unfortunately, this is an individual sport, and I have to deal with it. So, what you can say about this one?
You know, it's kind of interesting on that card. You know, the Brazilian fans are very nationalistic, and, you know, God bless them for that. I mean, they get behind their guys, and that's, to me, I think that's great. You know, you cheer for your home area. But after the first three fights, and the Brazilians were 0-3, that was the quietest crowd I'd ever heard in that country. And I don't know if you guys were able to see any of the event, but it was, you could just heard a pin drop. It was just really, you know, it's like, oh, my God, what's happening here? So my observation on it. Now, of course, they made up for it after the main event. That they really
enjoyed.
That
might just be a cultural thing, because I remember I was talking a few weeks ago about Rampage Jackson doing his interview with Larry King. And he talked about fighting in Japan, and it was like that in Japan. They actually almost enforced it, so people were quiet at all times during the fight, and all you could hear is the cornermen yelling fights.
Well, you remember now, that was back in the 90s. Now, I think Japan's more like America now, and Brazil's very rowdy if their guys are winning. That was my point, that they started off the card in the first three Brazilian fighters, as you just mentioned there, starting with Ronnie Jason Santiago, then Paulo Thiago, came up short. And after that third one, it's 0-3 for the Brazilians, and the crowd was just, I'd never heard them that quiet. Now, in Japan, in the old Pancration days, or Pancrase, it was kind of like watching a tennis match. They were very polite, but I think that's changed a lot now. I think they're a little more Americanized.
Well, according to Jason, he needed 15 stitches in his elbow and 7 over his eye. I was so angry, but that's nothing compared to my yeah. Jason, I guess you had a pretty good punch if you cut yourself. You need 7 stitches from 2 of your own punches.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy Stevens is really interesting, because he's another one of those guys that just when you start to write him off, he pulls off something like he pulled off here, and then whenever it seems like he's got the momentum going, he comes up short. But maybe he's put everything together. He sure did look good. So, and I know he's had a few outside of the cage adventures that kind of maybe got him sidetracked a little bit, but hopefully he's got it together. He's very exciting.
Now, speaking of getting it together, Tom, did you catch the Bellator fights last Friday?
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of the main event? I know there really wasn't much to talk about over the rest of the fights.
Yeah, well, I think it was predictable in the sense that Congo knew that he had the edge on the ground, and I think that Graham's cardio just by the third round, I don't know if it was a combination of the takedowns, the stress of the takedown defenses, the failed takedown defenses, or just the punches and everything else, but he just, I was amazed the guy could keep going. I mean, he was a little better with his defense on the ground than I'd anticipated he would be, because from what I understand, he's also a pro boxer and a pro kickboxer. So he's got a pretty big plate, but he better work a little more on his takedown defense and his ground game. But Congo, he got the W. I guess we can leave it at that. We'll see how he does, though, with some of our Russian friends coming up.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching the fight because, you know, I thought Czech Congo was always kind of underestimated in the UFC, and I used to always say, I mean, I think I mentioned on the show before that he's probably one of the most jacked, in-shape guys that you'll ever see with not really enough skill to match up with it. Like, I think he has the skill, but just no aggressiveness. I'd like to see him kind of go to Killer Instinct camp or something, because this guy, he had an opportunity about three or four times to take out Graham the other night, and he just paced himself, just continued to pace himself and backed off whenever he had an advantage. Like a cat playing with a mouse more than a fighter trying to win a fight. And just, I don't know what his problem is. I don't know why he does that.
Now maybe in his defense, I mean, he was in there, maybe he felt that there was just something about Graham that Graham just, because I know Graham looked like he was half drunk in that third round, maybe even in the second round. And maybe Congo just felt that well, there's something here. I don't know if I can get him out. I don't want to risk gassing, so who knows? And how about,
he was landing those kicks, leg kicks, body kicks, or head kicks every now and then. And he's landing a lot of those and just stopped throwing them after a certain point. And just pissed me off. But I'm sure being in Bellator is going to help him out, because he's not going to have to face the type of guys that are going to expose that weakness in him. And I saw Graham's last fight before that, and it was kind of the same deal. He was just as tired in the third round, but he won.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But made me wonder, you know, Red Sox, the Red Sox fans are called Red Sox Nation. So what are Chuck Congo's fans called?
Okay, now let's see here. Okay, come on. This Congo. All right, I give up. What are his fans called?
The Czech Republic.
Okay. On that note, let's swing over to the baddest man on the planet, self-billed Joe Warren.
That was a good point.
Yeah.
See that. He's pretty dominating. I mean, when I saw him as a coach on Fightmaster, that's the first I'd ever heard of him. And then they said he was a fighter. He's kind of old to be a fighter. He doesn't look old once he steps in the cage, that's for sure.
Well, the big difference, I'd seen him fight before he was a coach. And before, in his earlier incarnation, before he had his first setback, all he was a one-dimensional wrestler. Now, he was so good at it that it kind of overcame a lot of his glaring weaknesses in his stand-up game. But I think that when he was knocked out, that kind of switched things around a little bit. And I think he's been working very, very hard on his boxing. And I liked what I seen from him. So, and he's colorful. So we'll... Yeah, I guess he's right in line for a title shot now at 145, so we'll see how he does.
And, of course, tomorrow night we got the big Rampage versus the Mexicutioner there. Rampage's first fight in Bellator. It's going to be the main event. So we're looking forward to that one, of course.
Yeah, because I think Joey has a lot to prove. Coming down in weight and after getting cut from the UFC, I think he'll be highly motivated. And he's an interesting guy. He's very difficult to knock out. When he was fighting heavyweight in the UFC, he was Stipe Veloci's first fight. And Stipe gave him quite a battering and couldn't get the guy out. So it'd be interesting to see how this goes tomorrow.
We'll see. Just trying to find some other stuff there. Hold on. Got UFC 167, of course. Gotta go through that one. Main event, St. Pierre versus Hendricks. What do you think about that one, Tom?
As I've always said with George, he's on another level, and he's the champ, and until he's beaten, he's who my money's on. Now, having said that, I'll be watching every second of this, and this will be one of those don't-blink fights, because Johnny has that kind of just scary one-punch knockout ability, like Teddy Atlas would say, the eraser. And I don't care if it's the last minute or the last round, Hendricks is not out of it. I think, though, that it'll be decided as far as the wrestling goes. I think that George's best bet, I mean, stand with him for a while, but if George can take Johnny down, I think that's the key to the fight right there. Because I'm not saying Johnny can't fight off his back, but I just think George will have that edge, and I think that it'll go to the decision if he can control things that way. On the other hand, one left hand from Johnny can turn it around, but my official call, George, by unanimous decision.
All right. Well, I am going to second that motion because George likes to win by unanimous decision. He likes to control the fight. He's very good boxing, and of course, we know he has excellent wrestling, so I think Hendricks is going to be in trouble on this one. You don't want fans to come up. Rick Story, Fighter 12, back in December 4th, 2010. That was by unanimous decision. So, obviously, Hendricks has never been knocked out, never been submitted. So, he's professional. St. Pierre, you know, his last loss came against Matt Serra, and what they called a fluke at the time. Seemed pretty legitimate to me. And we've got Rashad Evans squaring off against Chael Sonnen. I know everybody's going to be rooting for Rashad in this one, whether they like him or not, because they probably don't like Chael even more.
Well, you know, this is one of those where Chael was interviewed, and he doesn't think he's going to be able to impose his normal style on Rashad because of Rashad's both his lateral movement. I mean, he's got very good boxing legs. I mean, he can, you know, that back and forth, and he's a moving target, and he also has superb takedown defense. So this could turn into an interesting fight on the feet, which should favor Rashad.
I think Rashad has a better record. He's basically better at that weight, but Chael Sonnen, he needs to win back.
Yes, and it's going to be very hard because Rashad is a hard guy to take down. When you get him down, he's a hard guy to keep down. Now, no one's better at it than Chael, but I just think in this case, Rashad's got the style to give him fits. So I'm going with Rashad. I don't know if he's going to be able to stop him, but I've got to go with the favorite on this one, or my favorite.
And it keeps getting better. This card is pretty stacked here. Main event here down to even the preliminaries. Some of the preliminaries are really good. Now, we also have Rory McDonald fighting Robbie Lawler. McDonald's 15, Lawler is 21. And I really like Lawler's fighting style.
Yeah.
Thought he was really stagnant in Strikeforce there. Really had nowhere to go. And now that he's in the UFC, I'd really like to get him up to a title shot or see him get up to a title shot at some point. And he's going to have to get through Rory McDonald to do it, which is tough billing. I mean, the guy's only got one loss. It's going to be
a
tough road.
Well, I just think, and I'm just going by my hunches here, because I know what the odds makers are saying about it. And I know that Roy is good at shutting down big punchers like he did in his last fight with Jake Elbert. But I just think that Lawler is on a whole nother resurrection here. And he just seems like he's got that old fire back that he had 10 years ago. And I don't know what happened to it in the Strikeforce days. You know, he had a few setbacks in UFC. Then in Strikeforce, he just wasn't the same dangerous Tyson-esque guy. I made up a new word, I guess, there. But, you know, when Lawler first came around, he was just exciting. I mean, you didn't know what he... You knew he was going to come in and throw everything he had. And I've seen that guy back again. So I guess for my upset of the night, if I were a betting man, I'd put a little bit of money on Robbie for this one. Go for the upset.
Well, his last loss, Wallers, was to Lawrence Larkin back in 2012, on a strike force card. And he's undefeated in the UFC so far, his latest incarnation. Beat Josh Koscheck and Bobby Volker since transitioning there. And, yeah, he had some tough fights in Strikeforce. His losses to Jake Shields, Ronaldo Souza, Tim Kennedy, and Lorenz Larkin. All those losses there. But had a few wins, too. Yeah, the rest of his nine losses are pretty scattered. And pretty much all some big-name guys. Other than Jason Miller.
Yeah.
Mayhem versus Miller. Rocky's still a big name, even though he's not really that great. But basically nobody that you wouldn't recognize as far as his losses go. I like his chances, but Rory's very talented. I think it's going to have to be a lot of mistakes on his part that cost him a fight if he does lose it. And we have Josh Koscheck fighting Tyron Woodley in an interesting bout here. Another Strikeforce guy, Woodley. Woodley's 11-2. Koscheck is 17-7. So he's got the experience factor. 24 fights to 13. But he's got a lot of losses and needs a big win here, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think this is going to be just a question of is Koscheck starting to go into decline. Part of me says that he is. So I have a slight feeling for Woodley in this one.
Yeah, that's and we have Tim Elliott, 10-3-1, fighting Ali Bogatanov. He's 11-2, and I really don't know anything about either one of these guys. So I don't know what to say on that. But seventh fight of the night, Donald Cerrone. 20 wins, 6 losses, fighting Evan Dunham. 14 wins, 4 losses. That one should be the sleeper hit of the night, I think. Because both of those guys really like to get in there and trade.
Yeah, and Cerrone is just so hard to figure out to me. He's another one of those guys that it's just it seems like he gets on a streak and then it goes. It just he does a U-turn. And this one, you know, he's getting to the point now where again Donald really needs a win here.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say which one's going to show up. This is really a tough one. I mean, because I've always been pretty high on Evan Dunham also, but I think maybe Donald is going to squeak this one out.
Awesome. And we've got a couple other big names with a lot of experience. Ed Herman coming in at 21-9, fighting Kelly Leites, who is 21-4. That should be an interesting fight. I like ladies in that one. I like the ladies. he's always good with the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and Herman hasn't looked good in his last few fights. So I really think this might be his last if he loses in the UFC. Let's see him on a series of fighting next. I don't know if it's a three strikes you're out sort of thing if he's lost his last two, but definitely are looking to cut people all the time if they don't see a fantastic performance out of somebody who's had some bad luck. Let's see. Checking his record now. And, well, actually, he's been doing pretty good lately. He actually had a fight with Ronaldo Souza, where he came over from the UFC to Strikeforce back in January. Must have been their last event. Bart versus Daffodil. Is that their last event? I'm not sure. Other than that loss, he is 1, 2, 3, 4, 4-1 in his last five fights, and he had a no contest against Jake Shields at UFC 150. So he had the Ronaldo Souza loss, and before that he hadn't lost since UFC 102 back in 2009 against Aaron Simpson. So I take that back. He probably isn't facing cuts. Anyway, that definitely should be a good fight. And we mentioned already Brian Ebersole versus Rick Story. Ebersole definitely has the experience factor, but he doesn't have the UFC experience. He's only had a few fights since he's crossed over to the UFC, so Story might have the advantage there, but I like Ebersole to win this one. And we have Eric Perez, 13-5, fighting Edwin Figueroa, who's 9-3. Don't really know much about either guy there. We got Anthony Lapsley, 22-5, fighting Jason High, 17-4. This is one I'm surprised to see so low on the card. Just based on the records of these two guys, you'd think they'd be higher on the card. But they're not. Anyway, we also have Sergio Pettis, former guest of ours, making his UFC debut against Will Campuzano, 13-4. Sergio could probably get on the show again. But, of course, he's the brother of the other Pettis, Anthony Pettis. And he's going to make a name for himself. He got a young start. He was, when we had the call with Duke Rufus, he was really high on Duke's list as far as the talent in his gym. And that says a lot for a guy like that. That kind of thing. So we'll definitely keep an eye on that and keep an eye on him and try to book him for a future show. I think he's going to do great things in the UFC. I don't think he'll ever fight his brother. We'll see. Anyway, we also have first fight of the night on the card is Ian Bolanke, 10-4, fighting Cody Donovan. That's really all I have on that card. I think I got through all my notes. So we'll see what Google alerts came in here. Manny Pacquiao dedicating his next fight to typhoon victims.
You know, I hope that doesn't really play on his mind too much, that whole situation over there.
What was that, Tony?
I hope that doesn't really play on his mind too much, that whole situation over there.
Well, I'm pretty sure wherever that town they keep talking about is Taco Man, I'm pretty sure that's far away from where he hangs out. Maggie is his training camp, I think. I haven't looked at a map or anything, but... you'd think if his hometown got ruined, we'd hear about it, you know, some corner of the boxing world. Well, let me get to this article and see what it says. The Philippines is pretty big. Anyway, Typhoon Haiyan hit the Philippines, and... of course, Manny has a November 24th fight in Macau, which is pretty close by. And that's against Brandon Rios. And he's still training over in the southern Philippines. Like I said, it's not that close. It's actually the typhoon struck to the north of where he's in training camp. Uh, says, in what he called a statement to his people, the 34-year-old Pacquiao said, "I really want to visit the area and personally do what I can to help our countrymen who have suffered so much in this terrible tragedy. But I'm in deep training for a crucial fight, so I regret I cannot go. I will send help to those who need it the most, and I enjoin all of you to pray for our country and people in these trying times." And there you go, Tony. While he's focused on the fight, obviously it's a distraction because he cares about his people, Freddie Roach said on Wednesday. We talk about it in the gym. He's concerned about it, yes, but he is pretty much on track for the fight.
I mean, it's just, in a way, it's impossible, you know, not to let it creep into your mind.
And Michael Cox there, Case in Manny's camp, says, "It's been one of the best camps I can remember. No tensions within, everyone dedicated to our jobs and working hard. Manny's in the best physical condition he can be in. His mindset is on showing the world he can still compete to the highest level." So, he'll be ready.
Okay. We'll take the word on it.
And I don't really have any notes or a story on it, but I did read this week that they're trying to challenge Vitaly Klitschko as far as running for president. They don't want to let him run for. They don't want to let him run for president of is it the Ukraine? Wherever he's trying to run for president, they're trying to say that law forbids him because he doesn't have a permanent address there, or he's not allowed to have any address in any other country that he keeps if he's going to be a president or he's going to run. So, very interesting development there. But keep an eye on that. Which obviously means that if he can't run for president, he's going to be devoting a lot more time to boxing. Tabs on that one. And let's see what else we got. John Jones versus Glover Teixeira, a title fight, has been booked for UFC 170 in February.
And called off. Last minute stuff. Jones is not going to be able to fight.
Really?
And we don't know why. This just broke about an hour before the show. So, they're going to have to look for another opponent for Glover. And Jones also said, while we're on John Jones, that he would kill Richie Incognito in a fight. And apparently Dana told him better. This is before he had pulled out of this fight in February. Apparently Dana said to him, tweeted him back and said, "You focus on Glover Teixeira, not Richie Incognito." So that's our humor for the evening. So there's all kinds of no one knows. No one has any idea what happened. If there was an injury because it's February when the fight is. So this is a very interesting development.
Yeah, I don't know what that must be. Maybe he's got some kind of a family commitment. To get married. his brothers are in football, so it makes sense that he would have some kind of commentary on it. One of his brothers plays in the theater, I think. Chandler Jones, yeah, plays in the Patriots. And actually, I think Richie Incognito used to play for the Patriots, if I remember correctly. But I don't think he was like that when he was here, if he was.
Hmm.
But that's a pretty interesting story. I mean, it makes you wonder what's going on that we don't hear about. It's very interesting to see how many people are kind of saying, well, yeah, it's not good what he did, but we'd like to try to keep that stuff in-house. You know, they didn't want that to get out because a lot of other stuff is done that is borderline. But we'll see how that goes. I don't know. I think it's kind of a little bit overblown, but it's pretty serious stuff. If you listen to the voice message that the guy left, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, just I have no idea if I know either one of those guys, but there are some lines not to cross, and it sounds like he's, even with close friends, there are some things that you just don't say. So I don't know what kind of relationship they had, but I also was just wondering what John Jones is involved in the whole thing for, why he feels the need to get throw himself into that. Well, maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe Incognito will be looking for a job here soon. So who knows?
Well, like I said, John Jones has brothers in football, so maybe he was just talking to his brothers about it. I like bringing it up. Royce Gracie's been back in the UFC picture. He was actually rolling around at the UFC Open Workout the other day with George St. Pierre. And on Wednesday, he says the UFC has become mainstream. And he says, I know because little kids now, when I travel, I'm on the road about 8 months of the year. And when little kids come up to you, you're talking about 8, 10-year-old saying, I want to be in the UFC. Can you hook me up? You know, the UFC made it. So Gracie's the older brother, Rory, and is one of the founders of the UFC. And Royce competed in each of the company's first 5 events. He says it needs to go back to no rules, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you... But he says the difference now is there's a lot of strategy. The guys have learned different styles of martial arts. Gracie's now 46 years old. He was 14-2-3 in MMA and 11-1-1 in the UFC. He also is one of the guys who fought 500-pound Akebono Taro.
Yeah.
And said he'd like to see no gloves, no time limit, no weight division. That would be very interesting, Gracie said. The game changes a lot. The strategy changes a lot. It's a different strategy. So it's mainstream, he says. It's growing, but he needs to go back to no rules. I don't know if that would work. It'd be very tough to do, I think. Anyway, we're going to get Brandon on the line. Brandon Shelton for the third time. See if it's the charm. All right, bear with us, folks. All right. Hopefully this works. Now it's telling me it's an invalid phone number. Hold on. I guess they have some kind of a country code in there. Call them another country. You guys still there?
Oh, we're up.
All right, here we go. All right, hopefully this works. Just change it.
Hello?
Hello, Brandon.
Yes, sir.
All right. This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited.
How you doing?
Great. And we also have Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line. He's our
And you guys there?
Yeah, we're here.
All right, got you now. We're kind of cutting out.
All right. We also have Psychic Tom Patchett.
Good evening, Brandon.
I'm here.
All right.
All right.
And we only got to ask you one question the last time, so hopefully we'll get in more this time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, how did you first get into fighting?
Well, I grew up wrestling. My wrestling really for me wasn't an option. My great uncle was the first 4-time state champion out of Oklahoma, and my grandparents and parents on just they all wrestled. So I wrestled growing up, and then got into judo when I was about 5, and just from there, after wrestling, went to OSU, and after that, I just decided what now. I had to compete, and MMA was the next venue. It was either that or the Olympics, and MMA was it.
And what would you consider the who's the toughest guy you ever fought?
I fought a kid named, well, obviously Joseph Benavidez. I fought him. He was tough. But another kid that really I had a good war with was a kid named Jacob DeVries out of Arizona. And we had a really fun fight. He was a goer, and both of us just pretty well beat the dog crap out of each other. So.
And that was fun?
Yeah, it was a blast. I like knowing I've been in a fight.
Well, I guess you...
So you train, if you train that long, you might as well have some fun doing it.
So.
Training's the hard part.
And what do you do, what's the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight?
Really just, I'm still learning in MMA. I mean, I know I've had 30-something fights. I don't really know how many fights I've had, but I'm still learning, so every day I just try to improve, just learn something new to make sure, you know, staying in good shape. Just constantly trying to improve, constantly trying to do something different. I feel like once you stop trying to do that, I think is you get content, you get lazy, you get comfortable, and that's when you really start to take a whooping and go downhill from there. So I'm constantly just trying to improve and stay hungry and keep my goals in order and, you know, keep trying to pick them off one at a time.
Now, you got anything going on for an upcoming fight or any plans or anything like that for the future here?
We don't. I was supposed to fight December 7th, and that fight card I found out today was pulled. I don't know what happened. I don't know if the casino stopped it or whatever, but I found out today that fight's off, so I'm back on the market of trying to find a fight, which is a task sometimes.
So you're still living in Oklahoma, I take it?
I am. I'm living in Oklahoma. I was out in Victorville, California for a while with Joe Stevenson, and then we went out to Vegas for a while with Coach Lehman and those guys, and now I'm back in Oklahoma training at R1 and Solid MMA.
And what's the scene like there? Are there any major local circuits, or are you pretty much...
There's a few. A lot of the fights, the bigger scale fights, you're going to have to go down south to Dallas or even, you know, go west to California or whatever. But there's a lot of non-sanctioned events here, which are good and bad. You can pretty much get a fight anytime with them. The medicals are next to, I don't even think you have to have medicals.
Yeah.
And you pretty much just go and fight. But now they've made a deal where I guess you're suspended 60 days from a sanctioned event if you fight unsanctioned, so that kind of eliminated that.
Oh, yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, so now it's pretty much all out-of-state stuff unless, you know, you can find they can bring somebody in to Oklahoma or whatever. I've pretty much fought everybody worth fighting in Oklahoma.
Right.
So.
Cool. What was your best moment so far in the sport?
Best moment? There's been a lot of good ones. I'd say, I'm going back to that Jacob DeVries fight. The best moment was in the third round, we were both just, I mean, covered in blood. We were beat the dog crap out of each other. And I actually ended up trying to hit a judo throw. He took my back, and I postured up, and I'm looking at the big screen, the monitors, and I see where his head's going. I can tell when he goes left, as he's going left, I'm throwing an elbow. As he's going right, I'm throwing an elbow. And gosh, we were having a really good time that fight. So I would like to say that fight. I'm going back to that fight again.
Yeah, I've seen that once before when somebody was looking. I forget who it was. I think it was a UFC fight. Somebody was looking on the monitor.
Yeah, I actually got it. I think it was Roger Puerta. That's what made me think of it.
Yeah.
Was I remember feeling like, I think I saw someone doing this. And I looked up, and sure enough, I saw Jacob's head right behind me on the left. I was like, I'm going to hit him with my elbow. And then his head moved to the right. I was like, there it is again. And then for about a minute, he couldn't figure out how I was knowing where his head was, and I'm staring up at the big screen. So.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. It's got to use whatever you can, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. If it's there, I'm going to use it. I try not to look at the clock too much, but that's also a habit that I'm working on breaking.
Yeah. Now, as far as your personal style, do you have any particular type of striking that you like to do more than any other?
I feel Muay Thai. That's what I really try to focus on, boxing and Muay Thai. I feel like if you can nail those two, then you're in good shape. I pick at kickboxing every now and then, but I really like to use elbows. I like to clinch a lot and push off and do a lot of dirty boxing and staying in close. So I like the knees and elbows and stuff like that, and I feel like Muay Thai really, really offers that. And
yeah,
so that's what we focus on.
I actually have noticed there's not really enough people who do throw elbows.
Yeah, I feel like it's starting to kind of pick up now. I feel like more people now, so, or even than last year, you see a lot more elbows. And I think John Jones really kind of brought that more to the scene.
Yeah.
But, I mean, out of a clinch, especially with the judo wrestling style, out of a clinch, I mean, you can land some really nice elbows from there and do a lot of damage. And I have no problem winning a fight because of the win's a win.
It's about every bad cut there is, it's from an elbow. So.
Absolutely. That's why and I've been hit. Joseph Benavidez, he introduced me to a couple of elbows, and that's what sold me on. I was like, gosh, those weren't fun. And so I was like, I'm going to learn that. I thought, I had never been to a boxing practice when I fought him. And he really showed me what MMA was. I think I was like 10-0 at the time. I don't know what I was officially, but I remember just being like, gosh, that's MMA. I was just taking people down and choking them. This is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And so since then, I learned the stand-up game. So.
Yeah, I'm surprised because, I noticed just hitting the bag every now and then. I don't compete in MMA. I just did boxing back in college. But I'm thinking about going into amateur MMA and getting a few fights before I'm way too old for it. And, it's just hitting the bag. Elbow strikes, they're so solid. I mean,
they stick.
Throwing a punch. Knee, I mean, usually with a knee, you have to pull the guy's head down, or you have to wait till he bends over to get him really. With an elbow, you can pretty much put it anywhere, and it's
going to
land solid.
Yeah, yeah. If you watch any of the Muay Thai, the high level, even low level, like lower event Muay Thai shows and stuff, I watch those. I mean, I study those a lot. I'm really interested in that. I have no intention of ever competing in Muay Thai, but I am really interested in the sport. And I mean, those guys are crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, they just take a whooping. People... In MMA, if I'm getting lit up, I am fully confident I can take you down. Like, I'm going to take you down, put you on your back, and then the punches don't hurt. I have yet to run into anybody in MMA I can't take down. But in Muay Thai, I don't have that option. And that's why that's for them. I'm good on that. I want the takedown if I need it.
Riddick Bowe feels the same way.
See what?
Riddick Bowe feels the same way.
Oh, yep.
He tried to go over there and an MMA or a Muay Thai fight, and I think he lasted like 40 seconds. The guy kicked him in the legs a bunch of times.
Yeah. I don't think I could keep from shooting a double leg if I started getting in there in the ring with those guys. I'm sorry, but I'm just going to have to take you down.
Now, tell us a little bit about your wrestling. What's your background in wrestling?
I started before I remember wrestling. I don't remember learning how to wrestle. That's just kind of typical in Oklahoma, though. Like, the Little League wrestling programs here will have 150 kids, 130 to 150 kids, all 10 and under. And so everybody gets started here early. But I wrestled. I was a three-time state champion. out of El Reno, our team was considered a dynasty team. We won, I think, 15 state titles in a row. So the reason I was on that team was because of that. We actually moved in to wrestle for this team. And went to OSU, wrestled there. I won the Ironman National Championships. Wrestling was my whole life, and now MMA is. And then judo on the same. I've only lost one match ever in judo. I think I'm like 240-1. So it's just judo and wrestling have evolved me into MMA, and now I've really focused a lot the last 2 years on stand-up, and so I just now feel like I'm very well-rounded. I've had a lot of fights, but I'm just learning. I'm just becoming my own fighter. I'm not a wrestler anymore. So.
Yeah, I did the high school wrestling, but I didn't do anything in college. When I got to college, I started on the wrestling team, then I fell off a roof and broke a bunch of bones, so I ended up doing the boxing after that.
There you go. My freshman year, the day before state, my goal was to be a four-time state champion. That's what everybody in Oklahoma wants to be, four-time state champion of wrestling. So that was my goal, and the day before state, I just got down to weight, and I told my buddy I'd help him get down to weight, and we just kind of got in a weird position, and he broke my elbow and shattered the growth plate on it, so they pulled me and wouldn't let me wrestle. So I ended up only being a three-timer, and just a crazy situation.
Well, it could be a worse excuse, like you stubbed your elbow. I think there was a fighter actually, or no, it was a football player, I think, that couldn't play last week because of a busted baby toe.
Yeah, no fun.
Maybe worse. That's quite an excuse to have.
Yeah, the doctor, Dr. Hines, he was an Olympic doctor. He was a wrestler. He went to, I believe, Athens with the team, and he's a really, really good guy. He's the doctor that if you can wrestle, he's going to make sure you're wrestling. It doesn't matter. He doesn't worry about anything but getting you on the mat. And we were in the hospital the day of, and it was the day before state, the day I broke my arm, and he was taping my arm to my body and having me move around in my wrestling stance in the hospital room, and he would snap my head and push me around. He's like, "How's that feel?" I'm like, "Ah, it hurts." I think I was 14 or 15 years old. He's like, "You're going to have to be tougher. You're just going to have to be tougher." So, I'm like, this is as tough as I am right now. But they decided after about 30 minutes of trying different ways to put my arm that there's just no way.
Yeah, I think the worst injury I had wrestling was when our number one guy was supposed to wrestle in a match, and I think he was going against a two-time state champion. And he had to pull out last second, so they made me go in against this guy. And this was before MMA was really big, back in like 94, 95.
Yeah.
And this kid wrapped me up in some kind of pretzel, like a triangle choke without the arm in there. And just had my legs in such a weird, straight-up position. And he was kept cranking on my neck to the point where I just lost all feeling on one side of my neck. So I let the ref know the kid hadn't pinned me or anything. And I was just like, my neck's broken. So they took me to the hospital. They did all kinds of tests. They didn't find anything wrong, but for a week, that whole side of my neck, like a big stripe up my neck, was numb.
Yeah.
Never dealt with anything like that before or after.
So. Were you in it long enough to get cauliflower ear?
Oh, yeah. I got cauliflower ear once. Cool.
There you go.
They had to stick the needle in there. That wasn't bad.
Good deal. Hey, I got mine in seventh grade, my first one on my right ear, really, really bad. In seventh grade, and they clipped one. It looked like a cow tag on my ear, but they clipped it to hold it in so it wouldn't be as puffy so I could still wrestle.
Right.
And so I had to walk around school for like a week looking like I was tagged like a cow in seventh grade, so... My social life was pretty much ruined at an early age, so all I had to do was wrestle.
Now, is there anybody out there you really want to fight? You really
I don't really care about all that. I mean, obviously, I want to fight whoever's the best. I want to keep fighting guys that are going to build my record. I want to fight guys that have built their record, and I want to beat them. So I feel like that's just kind of taking their their mojo from them. I want them to build it up. I want to have a tough guy, and I want to fight him. I've fought some guys in the past that, you know, win or lose, there's no point. Like, if I beat this guy, awesome. Like, but it doesn't mean anything. Like, if I lose to this guy, then he wins everything. I don't want to put myself in those situations anymore. I want to fight everybody that has the same goals and aspirations I do of going to the UFC and being, you know, the best, being fighting the Renan Barao, because I don't believe Dominic Cruz is even in his league. But I want to fight those guys, and I want to be there with them. But at the same time, I know, you know, I've got to keep refining me and keep developing me as a fighter, and then, you know, my time will come. I'll be there. So I just want to keep fighting guys that are going to help me accomplish my goals and help me build my fight career.
Yeah, how about people that you watch? Anybody out there that you watch regularly that you have to see when they fight, or all-time favorite fighters that you have?
All-time favorite fighters. I'm a big Dan Henderson fan, obviously. He's a wrestler. I like Chael Sonnen. Everybody hates him. I am a Chael Sonnen fan. He keeps me entertained every time he has a microphone and every time he's in the cage, and that's all I ask for. So I don't care if everybody hates him. I'm a fan.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's hate. It's just, I think he just annoys a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, just bickers at him, just makes everybody just cringe. And I've been there. I remember thinking, gosh, I hope Anderson Silva kicks his head off. But that's why I like him, because he will draw. He's the bad, he's the villain. Like, he's the good guy and the villain. He will draw so many people in just to watch him get his ass beat. And I don't care if people or my best friend or hate me. If they're buying tickets to watch me fight, then I'm doing my job. Because it's not just about going in there and choking someone out or knocking them out. You got to sell tickets or you're not going to get the fight. So, if, you know, I feel like he is a great example of how you sell tickets, win or lose. Yeah.
Sells himself is definitely top notch, but to me it's always kind of weird to see him, you know, really go after one person in particular, like Wanderlei or Anderson Silva.
And I feel like he does that to try to position himself in the right position to get that fight, because he isn't winning fights. Like, let's be honest, he's not winning fights. He is making it to where people want. He talks people in that he can beat Wanderlei Silva, which he probably will.
Right.
But what I'm saying, even if he can't win the fight, he's going to sell enough tickets that I feel like with him, he's getting the pay base he's wanting.
Right.
You know, he's gone as high as he can go.
Anyway.
And now he's pulling in the money. He's like, I'm not going to get a title shot. Let's see how much money I can make in the process and then with the remainder of my career. So.
Yeah, any other guy without that kind of attitude and popularity, or anti-popularity, I guess, would have probably been kicked out by now.
But oh, absolutely.
Let him go up a division, and he's still going. So.
Yeah, you know who I feel like kind of tries to, almost like his little stupid brother, is Jason Miller. I feel like they're both kind of in the same category, but Chael went the right way, and Jason, God, went way the wrong way.
Yeah, way right.
But that's just too different, you know, how they're both trying to sell fights. Chael did it the right way. Jason should have stuck with Bully B-Down.
Yeah, big time.
But
yeah, he's moved on to girlfriend B-Down, I guess.
Hey, he's winning fights, you know. I'm probably not allowed to say that.
For sure. But the other thing is, you know, Chael, as outspoken as he's been, he's never really criticized. You know, and he's obviously, he has to be saying good things about the brass, because they keep giving him opportunities not only to fight but also to be on broadcast doing analyst work, you know.
Yeah.
Is any other fight that does as much talk time on TV.
Oh, you're right.
And also is still fighting. You've got some guys out of the picture that aren't fighting right now, whether it's an injury or whatever, or they're involved permanently and doing analyst stuff. But he does still fight, so he's got to be doing something right.
That's exactly right. He has a career with the UFC when he's retired from fighting. He's set. So.
Yep. Anyway, what's your ultimate goal with all this?
Ultimate goal is I want to just take it as far as I can. This is what I've bought into it. I'm all about it. It's what I do. I want to eventually, you know, I want to be in the UFC. But my goal isn't to get to the UFC. Like, I know, you know, I keep doing what I'm doing, I'll get there. My goal is to make a household name out of myself. I want to be, you know, in the title fight. I want to have the title. I want to defend the belt. I know that's everybody's ultimate goal, but, I mean, that really is what I'm aiming for. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. I've never done anything that I don't want to be the best at, and I'm a very sore loser. And if I'm not going to be the best, if I don't think I can be the best at it, I just won't do it. And I really believe that this is something I can do, and that this is for me. This is what I'm here for, and I feel like I can really take it pretty far. So, only time will tell.
Well, you're a household name on our radio show by now.
Awesome. Awesome.
We've been talking about you for 3 weeks, trying to get you.
Gosh, talk about a clutch, dude. One time I'm driving in Davis, Oklahoma with no signal. Next time y'all are calling my old number, so.
I didn't get you last week, and then found out there was no sleep. Anyway, looking forward, is there any possibility of you signing anything anytime soon? Or?
I just had I don't even know if I'm really allowed to say it. I had a Bellator deal, but I turned it down due to they wanted to sign me for 24 months, and I wasn't willing to do a 24-month deal. So I'm really right now, I'm open. I'm, you know, if I take a local fight, I take a local fight. If I take another one, I take another one. I'm not turning down fights right now. I just, as long as the opponent's quality and he's a tough guy, I'll take the fight. So I just want to make sure, you know, I'm fighting the guys I need to be fighting, not guys that don't have the same goals I do, you know.
Yeah.
Not guys that are just doing it for, you know, a couple thousand dollars. So.
And what would you say you love most about mixed martial arts?
Competition. I love competing. I went maybe a year with no competition at all, no jiu-jitsu, no judo, no wrestling, no MMA, nothing. And I just, there's nothing. So, like, this is what I do. I'm a competitor. I compete. If I'm not training, I don't know, what am I doing? If I don't have a goal in a competition, then what am I doing, you know? So this is, my main thing is I'm a competitor. I like to compete. I like to grind it out. I like to, you know, cut. It sounds sick, but I like cutting weight. I like cutting weight because it really, I don't know if you've ever cut weight, but after you cut weight, Gatorades don't taste the same. Water doesn't taste the same. And
when you say that,
and
it tastes,
yeah.
I was at dinner last night talking to people about cutting weight. I did a weight cut. I still have a college boxing record. It's staying 16, 17 years later. I'm the only guy to ever compete in 5 different weight classes in a 3-month span. Yeah, nobody's even tried that since.
Yeah.
At 190, went up to heavyweight for a few fights, went down to 180, and then I was going to fight regionals at 180. 3-4 days for regionals, are like, what's your weight at? I'm like, dude, I'm at 178, 179. I'm right on weight. They're like, what are the chances you getting the 165 by Friday? And I'm like, yeah, I can do it. And I was actually so sick, and I was dry heaving and all that great fun stuff. And as soon as I got off the scale, I ran over to where the sink was, and I just threw some tap water in my mouth. And I remember turning, and I said, the water here is bad. I said, what do you mean? I said, it tastes metallic. And I grabbed a friend of mine's Gatorade and took a mouthful out of it. And I said, your Gatorade looks sour. And they're like, no, man, that's you. You're tasting your own iron.
Yeah, my last weight cut, I went into Walgreens to get some Pedialyte, and the lady looked at me and asked me if I needed help. She was like, are you okay? I was like, I'm good, I promise. She was like, do you need me to call somebody for you? I was like, no, I'm okay. This is normal.
Because we had to weigh in 2 days in a row. Thankfully, I had a bye the first night. And I get to the gym, and I wanted to make weight at the gym, and then we were going to drive 45 minutes to Penn State. And I'm sitting there, and I was like, sitting on the phone, and I was starting to get nauseous. So I had to go back to my dorm because I forgot something. And a girl I was dating, just by chance, happened to be getting off the one elevator coming from a class to go back to the dorm. She looked at me, she goes, "Oh, Jesus Christ." And she actually had to get on there and support me as I walked up to the dorm because I couldn't stand anymore. And saying that losing a fight to a kid that I had beaten before in the finals in the last 10 seconds because my legs couldn't hold me anymore and I went down. And
yeah,
it was just enough to give him the decision win. And I get a spot at Nationals at a weight class higher. So I went from 190 to heavyweight.
Tony, are you there?
Hello?
Oh, we lost Tony.
Yeah, let's say I got real quiet for a second.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 2-1.
Right in the middle of this freaking story, and his phone dies.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tom, you got any questions for Brandon?
Well, Brandon, first off, congratulations on how everything's going for you. I mean, I know I can just tell.
Thank you.
I can tell from talking to you that you're a hardworking guy, and I just love your attitude. And as you know, this game is three-quarters mental. I mean, once you have your conditioning down and once you have your technique down, the mental aspect becomes gigantic, your attitude. And I just love what I'm hearing from you, so, I mean, just keep it going. Now, my question is, coming from a grappling background and you realized you had to get a little more well-rounded, well, you had to totally get well-rounded, when you started working on your stand-up, what was the hardest part about that, trying to make that transformation from the automatic, you know, want to take them down to actually standing there and trading a bit with your feet? Did you notice the cardio was different, or did you really think it was hard making the change?
The hardest part for me, it wasn't cardio. Now, obviously, if you've ever done any type of boxing, you know, after a while, your shoulders, you know, your elbows tend to come up, your shoulders get really tired, they're burning. But that developed, you know, my conditioning got better there. The hardest part for me was when we were sparring at the beginning, was every time I'd get hit, I'd shoot. Every time I would get hit, I would take you down. Every time they would, you know, catch me at the right or left hook, then I'm shooting, I'm taking them down because that's my natural instinct. That was my reaction. Like, you know, I get hit, I'm going to take you down. So we ended up doing, you know, the big gloves, small gloves, where I had to wear the big gloves. The other guy got to wear the small gloves, and he got the punch, but I wasn't allowed to shoot. So all I'm allowed to do is box. That's it. His goal is to hit, shoot. I'm defending takedowns. Wrestling isn't an option. They had to completely eliminate it from my sparring, and that was Joe Stevenson. Joe said, you know, I had the same problem. When somebody shot on me or hit me, I shoot. And it's gotten me in trouble in the past. You know, you burn a lot of energy taking bad shots. You expose yourself for other stuff taking bad shots.
Sure.
And so he eliminated wrestling for me. He said, this is it. You know, we worked with Henry Ramirez out of Southern California, and he's an absolute genius. And, you know, the drills he had us doing stuff, and they just had to eliminate wrestling when we sparred for the first probably year. They said, you know, you can wrestle at wrestling practice, you can wrestle at jiu-jitsu, but when we spar, you're going to box unless we tell you otherwise. And I was like, okay. And that's what it took. It took me just getting in there and taking a whooping until I just adapted.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the more you work at it, the more comfortable you become and the more experienced, and the more you can relax. I think that's the key.
Yeah, it's more of a chess game than a brute match after a while. You know, it's a chess game. I'm going to punch this way to get your head to go this way. I'm going to circle this way. You're going to step in. And then you start to see the dynamics of it. And then it becomes fun. It's not a, holy crap, I don't want to get punched in my head today. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and I noticed that when I started training, I came from a stand-up background, and I really didn't have much on the ground. And I couldn't relax. And I just couldn't relax on the ground. And as a consequence, I just, after about a minute, I was done. So I had to just really focus on relaxing and just getting used to the technique and getting used to being there
just
and just changing
right
the whole Yeah, it's just like it was a whole other world, and I felt like, I'm out in the ocean and I can't swim. And so it's just a matter of not even working on the stand-up, just focus on the ground until you're at least comfortable. So yeah.
Hey, even Rocky had to have his arm tied to his waist to learn how to be a southpaw, right?
That's it. And that's Rocky. If Rocky can do it, then we all can do it.
That's it.
So, Brandon, tell everybody how they can find you out there online.
My Twitter is bshelton135. Facebook is just regular Brandon Shelton. And that's about it.
Alright. Is there anybody you want to give a shout out to or say hello to out there before we go?
Yeah, I'll give just a few of my sponsors: Black Hill Energy Drink, Cool Relief Ice Pad, Century Sports, Dr. Ron Spirit, and my beautiful girlfriend / coach / yells at me when I try to be lazy, Jackson Fisher.
Motivation.
And I thank you guys for having me on.
That's always the measure of a good guest for me. Somebody remembers to thank us.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, Brandon, I got to live up to my nickname of Psychic Tom. I used to work on one of those psychic lines, and my crystal ball sees a lot of good things coming, bud. Just keep up the good work.
Awesome. I appreciate it.
All right, Brandon, any final thoughts?
Everybody have an awesome evening.
All right. Glad to finally get in touch with you for more than a minute. And
yeah, it was awesome. Hope we can do it again.
Yeah, when you're a bigwig in the UFC, don't forget us, all right?
All right.
I'll take it easy.
All right, buddy. Good luck now.
All right. So that does it for this broadcast. We're about 30 seconds from getting the Blog Talk Radio lady here. And I tried Tony again, but he's obviously got a phone issue. So until next week, adios for me and for Tony.
All right. Catch everything this weekend. Big weekend coming up. Let's enjoy it.
Yes, sir. I have to catch up on 2 weeks of The Ultimate Fighter, too. So.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other thing. Lots of stuff to talk about that, but... So much to talk about, so little time, but we'll get set up next week.
Yes, sir, next week. See you then.
All right, bud. All right. We'll talk to you then.